you know, I'm sometimes asked, and a frame of what you might have asked is, what do you invest in? I've gotten that question. You know, you've been around for 50 years or so in the profession. What would you tell people? What's the best investment they can make? And I used to say invest in yourself, and then I used to say, after that, I said invest in the present moment, because the present moment is the only thing we have. And you can actually learn a mastery of the present moment. Mindfulness is actually a mastery of the present moment. But I think what I'm learning to say now, because in investing, we think of investing as a practical and pragmatic kind of thing. And that's wonderful. But, you know, it's a harsh metaphor for many people. It's as if we are factories or... a machine in some way.
Welcome, my friend, to the Conversations for Financial Professionals podcast. I'm your host, Dominique Henderson. And as a veteran of the financial services industry, I was curious to find out why, despite all the good that financial professionals can and do, that yet the term financial advisor could clear the room at a dinner party. Why was this? And what was this gap between consumers of financial services and providers of financial services? In this podcast, I seek to close this gap by having forward-moving conversations to advance the profession of giving financial advice and providing tools to the next generation of financial professionals to serve their clients at the highest level. As providers of financial services, we have the awesome privilege of partnering with consumers of financial services to help change family trees, normalize the creation of wealth, and help the industry as a whole to do less harm and more good. In today's conversation, we talk to Mr. George Kinder. That's right, Mr. George Kinder, considered the father of life planning. In this conversation, we cover what is planning, what does it mean, the evolution of financial planning from Mr. Kinder's eyes, how to become a complete planner, not just using that word holistic, but at least striving for the notion of being a complete and thorough planner in the lives of our clients. And finally, we talk about what is next for the planning profession. What models work best? How will we get there? What will it take? This will be one for the ages and that I'm sure you will enjoy. So let's sit back and enjoy the conversation. Welcome to another episode of Conversations for Financial Professionals, where we are shaping the next generation of financial advice. And today we have such a treat. We have the one and only Mr. George Kinder. George, you are internationally recognized as the father of the life planning movement. You've revolutionized financial advice for over 30 years by training thousands of professionals in 30 countries in the field of financial life planning. After 30 years as a practicing tax advisor and financial planner, you founded the Kinder Institute of Life Planning, delivering experiential training programs for professionals that help clients identify their most profound dreams of freedom and then use financial skills to deliver it. You are the author of 6 books, including 3 books on money, the seven stages of money maturity, must read for everybody. That's a favorite of mine. Lighting the Torch, Life Planning for You, another must read for financial advisors, if I might say something myself. A book on mindfulness called Transforming Suffering into Wisdom, and 1 book of poetry and photography, and recently acclaimed A Golden Civilization and the Map of Mindfulness. You were the first winner of the Financial Planning Association's Heart of Financial Planning Award, which recognizes individuals who demonstrate commitment and passion in doing extraordinary work to contribute or give back to the financial planning community and the public. And you've been named one of the 35 most influential people in financial services, one of the top icons and innovators in the financial planning industry, and the first of 15 transformational advisors whose vision has most changed the industry. Man, such a laundry list. I could probably go on with just stuff that I know also, but welcome to the podcast, my friend.
Thanks, Dominic. It's wonderful to be here.
Yeah, and, this is... Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, it's just quite something to hear all that list of things.
I love to do this. And sometimes I think people underestimate this when they're listening to a podcast, that this is the whole notion of give people their flowers while they're here. I've had this done to me, and it sometimes it's just like, oh, yeah, I guess I have done that. But it's a good... acknowledgement, and you need that acknowledgement because you've deposited a lot. As we get into this topic of true holistic planning, very few, if any, of my circle have not heard of George Kinder. So we're going to make sure that if anybody is in that circle that has not heard, that they heard today. let's start with what is planning? I think you have probably one of the most unique aspects or approaches, rather, to planning as a profession. And let me just demarcate that right now, because there's a lot of financial advisors out there, and I don't know if they're doing planning or not, but this conversation is going to be about planning. So talk about the evolution of planning from your eyes.
Well, there's so many aspects to it, but it's, I go all the way back. Basically, I was around when they started the whole field of financial planning. And at the time, I think many of us, myself included, thought, oh, another gimmick from the financial services industry. And boy, have I been proved wrong from that early, you know, kind of naive, you know, I was still in my 20s probably when it was just coming out. But originally it was thought of, and it really was a visionary idea of here we have a bunch of salespeople and we got a bunch of attorneys, basically. But nobody's really, you know, paying attention to all of the aspects of financial planning, and nobody's really putting the client first. And that was, I think, their notion. And it was kludgy at first. It was, you know, scotch tape and mirrors and, you know, as far as I'm concerned, it was pretty rough in a way. And a lot of the industry tried to make it real by producing things they called financial plans and then selling them. Mm-hmm. And they didn't really get it. They were product-oriented. Financial planning is not product-oriented. It's people-oriented. It's oriented toward your client. It's a beautiful thing. It's an incredible thing. And so it started that way. And so in the early days, but you know, how do you change an industry? You got to start somewhere. And so that was the nature of the services industry at the time. And so I think something very like a profession has been built out of that. And it was, and there were various movements in it, and I represent one of those movements. But probably the first thing was the financial planning designation itself, the certified financial planning designation. And then there was a group of people that thought, you know, we can't have commissions in here. We need to have just a purity of offering of product, of service, basically. So there was a fee-only movement that began to debate. And then there was the whole fiduciary question, looking at the question of investment advisor versus financial advisor. And at that time, there was no such thing really as financial advisor. That was a term that was invented by product companies because financial planning was becoming so strong and was insisting on the Investment Advisor Act, and the product companies wanted to continue to sell product, but they were losing. And so they said, hey, brokers, let's call ourselves financial advisors.
Wow.
And we won't follow the Investment Advisor Act. We'll do our own thing. And wow. So they pretended to the SEC that they were still brokers, but to the clients, they would pretend they were really advisors.
Wow.
Never subject to the fiduciary rule. So the fiduciary rule came up, and in the financial planning world, that's a very important concept, a very important issue that we treat, that we place the client's interests first. And then the third, and I think the final thing that has many really rich elements, and this is, I think, why you've called me on board here, is the life planning movement. And you mentioned holistic planning. It's one of the terms they're using for it now. But we've always called it life planning from the very beginning when we started this in the early 90s was when we introduced the term. And now it's active in 30 countries. Thousands of advisors use it all over the world. And that part of the financial planning movement really drew the attention more and more closely to what are we actually doing? Who is the client? And what we realized was that, you know, we want to fine tune this, not selling product, but listening. Something you're doing beautifully right now, Dominique. Thank you for humoring me and allowing me to go on and on. But it, what we learned was that in a client meeting, we don't want to talk. That the, if we're talking, we're probably selling them on something. Mm-hmm. And we're probably falling into the trap of all of their projections of what a financial advisor is. We're telling them how it is, you know, and as opposed to really just listening and supporting them. And supporting them with empathy, where the because money's a tough subject for many people. And supporting them with empathy, where it's tough. And supporting them with excitement, where they share aspirations that are personal, individual, meaningful, and what money is really all about for them. And so in life planning, we've shifted the focus from we don't advise on the money. I mean, we ultimately the money comes in and serves. But first, we got to know who the client really is and what they really want. And that's there's a lot of subtlety to that, because most clients come into our office going, yeah, you're another one of them. You know, and I'll trust you about as far as I can throw you, basically, and which isn't very far. And so they're very cautious. So we win their trust by listening to them, by placing them first, by acting as fiduciaries, and by we don't direct them, that we let them direct. We inspire, we facilitate them moving into the life of their dreams.
Wow! So much there, so much there, so much there. A couple things you said as I was listening to you that resonated with me is a conversation I had in season one with Bob Veras about what we actually do, the transformation we actually do for clients. And he was like, you know, write a list of, or have your clients write a list of 30 goals. Maybe he didn't put a number on it, but that's what I did with my clients, and I said, you know, financial or non-financial, easy, hard, or small, write those down. Like, what do you want your money to do? Because at the end of the day, you trade your human capital and your time for something, right? This financial capital that you can then do what with? And that was really eye-opening for me. And then a second thing that you said, I remember talking to Carl Richards about, it's just so weird that, not weird, but, you know, we all are on the same wavelength here. That's why we're all saying the same thing. But he talks about being genuinely curious for what the client wants to do and the transformation they're seeking. Because even if they can't articulate it, they're seeking something. Like, nobody just wants to trade all that time and effort for a pile of money that's just going to sit there and stare back at them. There's a reason that they're doing that. And I think, at least from what I've read and what I've seen of your work, that's kind of the essence of life planning, is it not? It's to help them realize this transformation that they're seeking.
Yeah, wonderful. One of many, many really rich points that you've now just shared, Dominique. And absolutely, that last bit in particular, what Carl Richard was talking with you about curiosity and being really interested in helping facilitate that transformation. And the question is, how do you get to that place where the client is really at ease, so at ease and comfortable with you and trust you so much that they are willing to talk in that kind of language without your introducing it, just because that's naturally who they are. And it requires a real authenticity inside of ourselves and a way of authentic listening. And a couple of things that I would, I want to get you in one of my programs. That's because,
well, I was going to say, do you want to segue this? I think I'm going to go off script a little bit, because I love the organicness of where we're going with here, because there's some elements of financial coaching that you've mentioned. And I want to clarify this, because I think a lot of people in the industry get wrapped around the axle rather than the wrong thing about terminology and vernacular. But financial coaching as a verb, not as a noun, right? Like, forget the term financial coach as what you do, vocation, but the act of, like you said earlier, being that facilitator in a conversation to help the client reach probably a decision that they've already been thinking about, that's already, you know, resonates with them, that you don't have to necessarily be this informant per se, or advisor, if you will. So I wonder if you want to dive into the three questions. I know about this, and I'm a butcher them, and I know you're the architect of these, but maybe go ahead and weave that in, because I think that's an excellent way for people to, let's say, create the atmosphere, create the space for the client to start to trust them in that particular way.
Great. Yeah, I'd love to, Dominique. I want to clarify, we really make the client our client and not their money. And so one of the things that we tend not to do, occasionally it can come up just because they're confused. They're so used to traditional financial advisors out there focusing on the money. The comment that I used to get more than any other was, wow, why didn't my broker ask me this? You know, it's like, because we're really curious about them. And so we rarely will ask them, what do you want your money to do for you? We ask them what they want in their life, basically. You know, why are you here? Profound questions. And this question of trust, the three questions can, if you've got a reputation with the client that you're with of being a salesperson in any way, shape, or form, and you ask them serious questions, and these are legacy questions, these are life and death questions sometimes. And if you ask them and they don't quite trust you, they're not going to answer. Mm-hmm. Or they're going to resist, or they're going to be annoyed at you. So the framing of it is really very valuable. And the first meeting we do, we call our program, first of all, we call ourselves life planners, not coaches, sometimes financial life planners. And the first thing we do, the first meeting, is just listening. So we don't even ask the three questions in that first meeting.
Mm.
Someone comes in, you know, they've been driving, you know, or riding the subway or whatever, and they've arrived at your office, and there they are. And now, of course, it's all over Zoom, but they've been racing around the house or in their office, kind of scurrying over their figures and thinking, what do I want to ask this person? And so they've got all their, they know what they want to say. So you do not need to lead them into your topics. You want to give them the field.
Mm.
And so our question is, so why are you here? It's really open-ended.
Let's stop right there because what you just said is a mouthful, because when I think through all the things that I've learned, I have a master's in securities analysis and portfolio management. I have my CFP. I have my back. You know, I got all this stuff in my brain that usually I'm just really anxious and eager to dump out on somebody, right, to show them how much I know. And to reverse that role and really just be present in the moment actually brings in some, and I want you to go here if you want to, in some personal development. Like, right, you need to be mindful. You need to have probably sat with quiet and uncomfortable conversations in your life, which is the reason why I tell career changers that they have a set of transferable skills that usually map pretty well to this career if they do it well. So talk about that, because I think it's super uncomfortable for financial advisors to just sit with like the uncomfortable silence in some of those meetings after you pose one of those questions.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. And Dominique, I was a math major originally at college, and I went to Harvard. I mean, I would talk about being analytical and up here and all that kind of stuff. So I knew exactly what you're talking about. And doing that kind of stuff, you have a strategic edge that is an advantage over just about anybody. But you're sitting there in that meeting. Think about that strategic edge you have. Why would you play your cards?
That's good.
Why would you throw it all out there? You've got everything they need from that standpoint. They don't have any of it. Why play them?
Excellent.
So it really is an insecurity that brings that up, an anxiety inside ourselves. And strategically, we can understand that. That's, you know, what we want is, how can we actually serve them? You know, how can we actually, without them really unveiling who they are and sharing what they really want?
What's the first step in becoming a successful financial professional? Well, doing your homework. And there's no better place to understand the financial services industry than Jumpstart.com. University. With video after video of hours and hours of content on topics like the different careers available in financial services, advice for making the switch as a career changer, what to consider when becoming an independent financial professional, how to attract and retain new clients, what's involved in becoming a certified financial planner, and day in the life of a financial advisor, with so much more. All of this for free. You just got to click through the YouTube ads. So head on over to YouTube now to check out Jumpstart YO University. You can find that at youtube.com/JumpstartYO University. Now, let's get back to the conversation.
If they just tell us they want their 401k adjusted in this way or that way, or they've got a tax issue because they just got some money from their parents or an inheritance or something, and they're concerned about this, or a portfolio adjustment or whatever, we're serving the money. We're not serving them. Mm-hmm. And we're likely to make a poor judgment because we don't know who they really are and what they really want in their life. We may put them in some vehicle that is tough to get out of.
Yeah.
And in fact, they want to make a major change if you really, but they're embarrassed about it. They're shy about it. They haven't even shared it with, you talked about, they've thought about it. They might not even have shared it with their spouse sometimes. And so we need to build that relationship if we're going to serve them really well. And that's what being a real fiduciary is. And that's what a life planner is, first and foremost, above any other aspect of financial planning.
Yeah.
A life planner is that. So we train people actually in these listening skills that you're talking about. And it's great. You know, what you're saying is the people coming to you, absolutely. If they've been in HR, if they've been in counseling, they want to transfer into a money thing because they figure there's more money there. There probably is. And what a profession, what an experience to do this work with a client. And you get to do things that a counselor never could because a counselor doesn't know money.
No,
so just
right.
as yeah. just as a client isn't going to trust you if you're a salesperson around money, they're not going to trust you around money if you're a counselor because you don't know money. So to put this together, oh my goodness, what a beautiful thing. And you are now giving to the client something extraordinary, which is you're putting their life together. The smiles that leave your office are the reward, more than money. Absolutely.
Yeah, I have to interject this before you get to the second question. I was recently on a call with a client, and I think I shared this with one of my guests. I can't remember right now, but long story short, it was the husband's birthday, who hardly ever comes to our meetings. And he was like, I just want to let you know, Dominique, that I have seen a very marketable change in my wife. And I just want to thank you because, I see the stress levels have, gone down, dissipated in some areas. And he's like, I just want to let you know. Like, I just want to tell you. And I was like, man, I really appreciate it. That's like one of the highest compliments I've ever gotten in my career. And I've been doing this for a really long time. And it just it speaks to what you just said about people leaving with smiles, outward expressions and inward expressions. Right. Because stress, as we know, kills. And so I think we're in such a beautiful seat as financial professionals to be privileged to serve people in that particular way.
We are. Yeah, it's incredible. And just to go back to the questions on this, we're totally in sync here, Dominique. The in that first meeting, I'm not really doing what are the famous three questions. I'm giving open-ended questions. And really all I ask is, why are you here? And then the second question, we've got many ways of doing, but the second question is just simply, anything else? And what you're saying about pausing, about mindfulness, I mean, we train in mindfulness because it gives a person an interior practice that enables them to be present without getting jittery, being calm. And it gives them the ability to trust the pauses. and even to facilitate better out of them, and to understand more the emotional range that a client is going through, naturally going through. Money's a tough topic. Yeah. So that first meeting is just really open-ended, and what we're mainly doing is showing excitement when they share something that they're excited about and, or aspiring to, and showing empathy when we hear about a tough time. And we're not like a therapist going, well, tell me more about that. No. Just empathy. Oh, I'm so sorry. Mm. Letting them fill it in. So they feel like it's their meeting. And what they get from that is they really get that you're really listening. That's really who you are, is you're a great listener. And then it's usually in the second meeting, sometimes at the end of the first, but usually it's in the second meeting I introduce the three questions. And there are a number of exercises we give. But the three questions are the ones that are the most famous. And they give the feeling, and I'll just do it briefly because you're asking about them. The first one is just simply, if you had all the money that you needed for the rest of your life, what would you do? So that's the first one. So, you know, you win the lottery, you know, it's kind of, first question. So money, you know, anybody can kind of fantasize about that. Second question, steeper. You go to the doctor, you discover you only have 5 to 10 years left to live. What are you going to do? What are you going to do with your life? How are you going to live? What's going to be different? And then so you can see that gets more serious. Often it's more about relationship. Sometimes not, but often. And legacy. And then the third question is kind of the ultimate legacy question. And you can't ask it without winning the client's trust first. This is where they'd fight you because it's too personal. And you go, the final scenario, you go to the doctor and you're told that you have a rare ailment and it was misdiagnosed and you only have 24 hours left to live. The question isn't what you're going to do. It's not going to a bar and drowning your sorrows or gathering your family together. It's not what would you do. It's reflecting on what you'd anticipated your life being over the next decades, whatever. What did you miss? Who did you not get to be? What did you not get to do? And that's the question that forms more of the basis for a financial plan than any other question.
Mm.
Because it's authentic, it's real, it's urgent, it's life and death, it's legacy, it's meaningful, it's not superficial, it's not a broker asking someone, hey, what do you want, you know, and then them listing a bunch of things, and the broker then trying to get them the money to pay for all of that. No, it's meaningful stuff, and often it doesn't cost that much, but it will mean everything to the client if you can deliver them.
You say that, and I have to interject this because you got me ruminating on some things that I started 5 years ago that I'm like, I'm going to go back and do that. But this notion around performance chasing, right? A lot of financial professionals get into this, especially those that involve the investments where, you know, clients are like, yeah, I need to get to $7 million or whatever number there is. And really there's no basis for why they need that money. They definitely can't tell you how they need that much or why they need that much. And I think about all the energy that I myself, just to be honest and frank, have invested in trying to justify whatever number we've agreed to, right? But at the end of the day, if at first we would ask that third question, then we can really realize that we don't even need that. We need like 10% of that, and you're going to have a really great life. Because like you said, and I think you alluded to this, you know, the second question is about doing, human doing. The third question is more about human being, and that's what everybody wants, is a legacy. They want to leave something behind. They want to be known for something. And I think that is so key to be able to deliver that as a financial professional. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I absolutely. I couldn't agree more, Dominique. It's just, and it's why life planning for us and for all of our advisors has been so incredibly successful, is because the advisors feel that. I mean, imagine every meeting that you're meeting with a client, they are revealing to you who they really want to be, and you're facilitating it. So you're part of that intimate relationship of their life with their surroundings and their family and their businesses and their creativity and their spirit and all of those things. It's incredible.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more.
Couldn't agree more. So let me ask you this. What is what's next for this profession? Because we've interweaved a lot of things. I mean, obviously, there is the Registered Life Planner, Kinner Institute, what you guys do. There is financial therapy that's out there. There's financial coaching. Sandra Davis, who I think you know, a good friend of mine, talks about the continuum of financial care and all these different stair steps that people take, consumers of financial services take in order to, you know, reach their destination, if you will. And I wonder, you know, from your perspective, from where you sit, where do you see the profession going in the overlap of all these different disciplines as career changers and aspiring financial professionals and even existing financial professionals seek to find where do I fit in all of this and serve people?
Yeah, I'm very partial to what we've done. The methodology that we use is called EVOKE, E-V-O-K-E, and it's an acronym for five phases to the engagement, and that builds trust and then asks inspiring questions and then helps people facilitate and solve their own obstacles to their legacy issues. And so when you ask where the profession needs to go, there are a number of different thoughts I have. One of them is that there's kind of an inside-outside relationship here. We started this profession because the industry was dominated by large product companies. And that's just not the right thing. And it's not good for clients. And in so many ways, you go even to the banking, you know, the Senate Banking Committee, and you look at you can research through opensecrets.org or .com. You can research who paid for the Senate campaigns of each of those senators. Guess what, Dom? Wasn't you and me, you know?
Yeah.
It wasn't, you know, our communities of financial advisors. It was big banks, big insurance companies, big brokerage firms, big mutual funds. It was big companies. And one of the reasons that life planning primarily thrives with the smaller firms is they have more, it's controlled more by real people. Mm. And they want to serve real people. So there are issues here about what is fiduciary. I personally, you've probably heard this, I believe that we have an obligation as corporations, as governments, as nonprofits, to be fiduciaries to the planet and to be fiduciaries to democracy as much as fiduciaries to our constituents, our clients. And we've failed in that, and we're continuing to fail. We can see the polarization in society that's coming because we're not simply understanding that we are fiduciaries. A large organization should be of service, and that should primarily be what it should be. So there are two things. One is, you know, in terms of the industry needs to become fiduciary in everything that it does. And that's a huge issue. That's a political issue, ultimately, and it's something that I'm trying to bring attention to in my speeches and around the globe and in my writings. But there's another aspect to this. One of the things I say is a corporation can't breathe, and a corporation can't sing a song of protest or sing a hymn.
Mm.
It's not a human being, and we are, and we're what this world is about, and what this earth is about, and what the profession is about. So there's two things here. One is to reform the industry, the service, to become more one of service and more fiduciary. The other one is inside ourselves that you alluded to earlier and you keep coming back to, which I love about what you're talking about, which is legacy and fiduciary, is that one of our sayings is you can't be a life planner unless you've been life planned. You can't be a life planner unless you're living your life plan. So we need to do the interior work to be able to listen so well to ourselves that we cut through the nonsense and deliver ourselves. And we trust others to actually help facilitate that. Yeah. So I think it's got beautiful future, but there are some things to be done.
Yeah, I joke with this, and I call the broker dealer the broken dealer. And maybe I shouldn't cavalierly throw that around like that, but you just reinforced it. And I'm like, you know, I've been doing this for 20 years now. I can call them the broker. I can call them. I've earned that right. But, you know, I think what you said earlier about if every company started off with the idea of how can I serve you from the fiduciary camp standpoint, I wonder how that would fix things like the retention of talent and the talent pipeline and all these different things that, you know, even in 2020 and 2021, I had clients coming to my firm saying, I've never had this explained to me this way. Why is it so hard to find financial planners like you? And I'm like, I apologize on behalf of the profession and the industry that it's like that, because as you noted, millions of dollars are spent every year, you know, as Carl Richards says, you know, through the Financial Pornography Network, brainwashing people and whatnot. And so, you know, it is good to see what you're doing, you know, what I'm doing with others with like minds are doing in this industry, because I think there is hope out there. Because one thing I will say from the seat I sit in, aspiring financial professionals that are learning about this industry and have learned about this industry, let's call it in the last 5 years, they're way different than when I came into the business. They want change. They want impact. They can care less if they manage assets. They want to give back to their communities. Those are the type of things that I'm hearing. And that's promising, to say the least.
Yeah, absolutely. And I certainly don't mean to speak against the basics of a great financial plan, because you need that. You need to know how to invest. You need to know tax structures and retirement vehicles and all the rest. And you're absolutely correct around retention. I mean, one needs only to look at Europe to see a more civilized kind of approach to time off, to vacations, to child care, all of that kind of stuff. That's all a benefit. Fiduciary solves many things in society, I think, Dominique, even more than what you're describing. I think if we had a fiduciary ethic throughout all of our institutional life, we would see the end of war. Mm. We would see the end of propaganda, because you can't spew out false news if you're honing to the truth, if you have a fiduciary obligation to people. It would end bigotry and racism, I think. It would end corruption, all of these things. So the wonderful thing about this is that we are, in the financial planning world, fiduciaries. We are, and we know what that term means. There's not another field out there that has such a rich awareness of what that term means. Let's take our understanding, deliver it with great meaning to and great skill to the client, and let's bring it to the larger industry as well. Now I think you've got a revolution, and it's a great one.
Wow. Man, I don't know that I want to end with another book in besides that, but I have to ask you. I have to ask you, with this being a podcast to empower tomorrow's financial professional with tools that will allow them to serve their ideal client at the next level, what word or words of wisdom would you leave? I would love for you to just really impart into this next generation as the father of life planning.
Well, I'm gonna use one totally self-serving thing, or it may seem that for a moment. I love our five-day program on Evoke, and it's an incredible program on really learning. You get life planned yourself. You practice life planning with others. It's real. It's authentic. And you learn mindfulness to how to use it. You learn empathy and aspirational skills. Just a fantastic thing. So I'm going to mention that, plug that, if I may. On a deeper note, perhaps a more serious note, you know, I'm sometimes asked, and a frame of what you might have asked is, what do you invest in? I've gotten that question. You know, you've been around for 50 years or so in the profession. What would you tell people? What's the best investment they can make? And I used to say invest in yourself, and then I used to say after that, I said invest in the present moment, because the present moment is the only thing we have. And you can actually learn a mastery of the present moment. Mindfulness is actually a mastery of the present moment. But I think what I'm learning to say now, because in investing, we think of investing as a practical and pragmatic kind of thing. And that's wonderful. But, you know, it's a harsh metaphor for many people. It's as if we are factories or a machine in some way. And rather than invest in something, I'd say learn to know yourself and really give yourself the space to do that. Again, mindfulness is a wonderful thing. Getting life planned is a wonderful way to learn to get to know yourself. I have no doubt getting better to know Dominique Henderson is a wonderful way to get to know yourself as well. Find really good people, really good mentors to be with, really good communities. Go for what's best inside yourself. Think about that first. And what is best for your client? What's best inside yourself is going to be what's best often for your client as well.
Wow. The one and only Mr. George Kinder. I appreciate you, sir. Very, very rich conversation. I'll be chewing on these nuggets for days to come. Thank you for making this deposit into the community.
Wonderful. Thank you. Thank you, Brian.
I really hope you enjoy this conversation. Before we go, just a few things. The best way to retain what you just learned is to do more than just listen. You first might want to write down your most important takeaway and then give yourself a deadline to apply it. For bonus points, you might also let someone hold you accountable to that deadline. And remember, the only way more people will know about this podcast is if you share it. You can do that by sharing a link to this episode on your social media or by leaving a review on iTunes so that it reaches a wider audience. I'd appreciate if you took the time to do either or both. And finally, if you'd like to learn more about how Jumpstart can help you become a next generation financial professional or partner with you in finding next generation talent for your organization, send us an email at hello@jumpstartcoachinglab.com, just in case you needed to get a pen to write that down. That's hello@jumpstartcoachinglab.com. Bye for now, until our next conversation.